Want to become an AI trailblazer in the product world? Pragmatic Institute's newest workshop, AI for Product Professionals, is your ticket to generative AI mastery. In this hands-on training, learn to master ChatGPT and prompt engineering to transform your product strategies, rapidly create content, optimize workflows, and make razor-sharp product decisions fueled by data. Don't just keep up with the AI revolution, lead it. Seats are limited. Enroll today at pragmaticinstitute.com/AI workshop.
Hello, and welcome to the Pragmatic Product Check series, where we tackle the biggest challenges facing today's product management, product marketing, and other market and data-driven professionals with some of the best minds in the industry. I am Rebecca Caligaris for Pragmatic Institute and your host for this episode. Today, we are joined by Sean Guerramosa, product leader, agile expert, innovation enthusiast, self-described product management ninja, and CEO and founder of Clarative. Now, some of you may have heard of this little thing called generative AI. It's pretty down low. No, I mean, it's what everybody's talking about. But one of the reasons I wanted to have Sean on is Sean has been in that sort of big data AI space way before most of us have gotten to play along. And I think he's got a great perspective on sort of the progression of it, as well as the progression from product manager to CEO, which I know is a path some of us definitely envision as a possibility. So we are extremely excited to have you on, Sean.
Awesome. Well, I'm really glad to be here, Rebecca. So I really appreciate you having me, of course.
Yes. All right. I always like to start, as I say, talking about everyone's origin story. Like, how did you get where you are today? And where is it that you are today? So tell us a little bit about your journey.
No, for sure. And so it's almost that ninja origin story, right?
Right,
like
exactly.
You watch all of these kind of like movies or even animes where, you know, like, oh, like, you know, I grew up in a small village back in the...
Exactly.
So it's almost like that. I was born in the Philippines in Davao City in the South and migrated to the U.S. when I was young. It was like a long time ago. And basically, like, I want to say is like, as I was growing, I was always been into tech and technology. So like growing up, I built my own computer. I had that very inquisitive mind. And that's how sort of like I progressed in my knowledge, you know, like because of that, I was so interested in web development. So I taught myself HTML back when nobody really was doing HTML, like, you know, like early mid 90s, got to work at, you know, like a lot of those firms during that time when the internet was booming, building, you know, like I would call them web applications, but at that time, you probably didn't care. You know, we didn't really call them web applications, right? You know, like for companies like Barbara Langley, who, you know, like who did the TV show Comps, you know, Bad Boys. So I'm going to sing Bad Boys, Bad Boys, that show.
What you gonna do? Yeah.
Exactly. You know, all the way to Midway Games, you know, like they made Mortal Kombat and all of those. So it's really different industries. But over the decade of kind of like doing development, I had that inkling. I was like, what's on the other side? Right. You know, I got to a point where I'm building things what people told me to build. What is it? Or, you know, like it might be more interesting to like, kind of craft and think about what needs to be built, right? So I shifted. I went into kind of like the business side. I mean, like I always say it's a business, but it's not really the business side. It's really the product side, right? That's the start of my product management journey as a BA for Reliant. Then, you know, like after Reliant Energy, I worked at Rolls-Royce as a TPM, technical product manager. And after that to Premier Digital as a VP of product. Then finally here at Clarative. But, you know, like towards that kind of like that progression, the one thing that's always been constant is to me that want or that understanding, that need to know customers' problems and really identifying the pains and the problems and the jobs that need to be done. And not necessarily to start with a solution, but to start with, like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
Or why do you need this, right? And that's, and again, that's my journey. I don't know if that's a really interesting journey, but the whole ninja personality persona really was kind of the core of that, because my belief, you know, like with ninjas, you see it in movies where they have all of these tools, they have all of these weapons, they have all of these things that they use to achieve an objective. Mm-hmm. And in my belief, that's why I'm self-proclaimed, that's how a product manager is, right? Yep. So it's not about having one set of tools. It's knowing, it's understanding Agile, it's understanding all these different methodologies, all these different frameworks to tackle a challenge and to try to achieve the best possible outcome with the tools that you have on hand.
Nice. It's an excellent origin story. Any origin story that can include singing, which anyone who knows me is a weakness of mine, and discuss Mortal Kombat is a pretty good origin story. Like, that speaks to awesome. Me very well. Okay, yeah. I want to talk about a bunch of different things you touched on. One of the ones that I happen to know, because we talked before, is your time at Rolls-Royce and your use mm-hmm. of a digital twin, because I think this is a concept that is super interesting. So first, for our listeners, tell us a little bit about what a digital twin is and then how you leverage that at Rolls-Royce.
So yeah, no, thank you for that. And I want to say I'm probably one of the biggest digital twin evangelists. I call, you know, aside from being a ninja, I always tell them, I'm a digital twin evangelist. That's my other persona. Right? And I really truly believe in this technology. And like the best thing, or the easiest thing to communicate on what a digital twin is it's not a picture. It's not a 3D model. And, you know, sometimes they, you know, like you have these companies like, oh, I'm going to build a 3D model of this car, of this building. And then that's it. It's like, well, that's not a twin, because that's a picture, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It doesn't really, it's not, for the lack of a better term, alive.
Right.
Right. What a twin is, it has to be a representation of that physical object in all senses. Mm. Like in the data, in the imagery, in the, you know, everything that would affect that specific object needs to be represented in the twin.
It's like a clone online, for lack of a better...
A clone online. Yep. Exactly. Yep. Right. Because to be able to generate insights, right, about that twin, on you to predict what's going to happen, you need to know the history of everything that led it to that point. And you need to know all of the inputs that's happening to be able to see like, okay, well, because of these inputs and because of my history, this is where it's probably going to go, right? And to me, like once you have all of those connection of data, the imagery and all of the history, then that is a digital twin. Because I go back to saying like, hey, if I have a, I gave this similar talk in one conference. It's like, if I take a picture of myself and put it on Facebook or Instagram, people can say that's a digital twin. Well, it's not.
Right.
Right. It's a picture of me for a specific event in my life. It doesn't actually represent, or you can't really tell what it is, or, you know, like anything about me except for that picture.
So we have this robust clone online. In this case of Rolls-Royce, I assume it was a clone of the car, but it could be, right? You can make a digital twin about all kinds of things. But obviously you're a big evangelist because you see the advantage of it, right? So talk to us about what does that unlock when you have a really robust 3D electronic model, basically, of either your product mm-hmm. or your persona or whatever it is.
So I'd like to talk about this because this is what we did. So like, let's just say for an engine, right? With Rolls-Royce, they build engines and you have this engine in a car or a train or an airplane. And you know, based out of location, because you're getting all of the data, you have the engine that this car or train or plane is going to an area that's, I want to say, in the fall, where there's a lot of, you know, it's in a forest or a tree. And what do you, or in fall, maybe spring. And what do we expect during spring? Based out of, again, of like historical data, spring, usually there's a lot of pollen, right? Because flowers are blooming, so on and so forth. And because you have all of these different points, you can then tell from with that engine, like, and you can look at the data that's happening within that engine right now. It's like, hey, there's something wrong with the performance. Maybe it's not pulling in as much air. Like, why is that? And then when you look back, it's like, oh, it's because it's fall. And there's a lot of, then using that insight, you can say, okay, well, maybe it's time to change the air filter. and check the air filter if there's a lot of clogging because of all of the pollen. So those are the kind of like the use cases that you can do by, there's a term that I've used before. You basically put data one after the other, right? Where you look at it from one slice, and then you look at it from a different slice, and then you extrapolate and generate insights based out of all of the information that's provided.
So it really allows you to test, to predict, to see how it will perform in a variety of different ways based on data and information without the danger or cost of necessarily like, hey, we should just drive a bunch of Rolls Royces around in the fall. Though that could be fun.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And what's great about it is we go from prescriptive maintenance to predictive maintenance.
Oh, that's powerful.
Right? Because, you know, like you know it with your, you know, with cars right now, like, oh, like there's a, hey, after 3,000 miles, change your oil. Or after so-and-so, do this. Like that, there's like a lifetime of these parts. Well, is the lifetime really accurate or is it just, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because
or
my,
is the usage
my 3,000 miles
important?
In the snow is very different than your 3,000 miles in the desert, right? And it could be the difference on highway and that. So instead of right now, we just kind of have to go, eh, this is a good average, right? This will keep the body shops happy. You know, you really start to go, you need an oil change because of the way you drove or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge tweak in the way that you think about it. That's very cool.
Exactly. And it's a lot of savings too from the manufacturer, from the support perspective, because they can extend the life of these parts of these engines because you don't, maybe you don't necessarily need to change your oil, or maybe you don't necessarily need to change your air filter because the usage isn't, you know, to that level. And it's like, it's those use cases that really great get me, you know, excited about the digital twin. And that's just from an engine perspective. From a person perspective, there's even more, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say, you know, like you have a person and you have all of the data that kind of like builds on it, from medical to, you know, like let's say medical and health to consumption, like what foods do you eat? And then you can see like, okay, well, you know, like this is how I'm feeling. Maybe I need to go see a doctor you know, like my caloric intake is this, you know, like maybe I need to slow down, or my stress level is this because I have all of these things that's happening to me. Like maybe I need to like relax for a little bit.
I have this dream that's probably not possible. So that's why it's in the dream category. But like the idea of having a digital twin of my persona in an organization, right? Where I've used so much data and it's so robust that we can play it through different scenarios, see how it reacts to different things, right? See how it might interact with the product, right? To help us really see that. Now, obviously that persona has to be a lot deeper and based on a lot more research than just, I think we'll call him Bob. But yeah. I could see that being really, really powerful addition to our research mechanisms.
No, for sure. And I think we're probably, I want to say, you know, like maybe this is a dream also of mine. It's like, I want to say we're closer than we are. And what I mean by that is I think knowledge, or 70% of knowledge, is kind of like learned through conversation, right? So the more you talk to people, the more you learn, because you learn different perspectives more so than reading or actually teaching is probably more like, if like it's like 90%, if you teach something, you probably know, learn more about that subject. Now, because of that, you know, let me just shift a little bit to clarity. Because of that kind of like understanding of 70% of knowledge is learned through conversation, if we can extrapolate the insights from that conversation, we can then build that brain person, right? So if you know, capture and extract knowledge from all of your different conversations, you build that brain of yourself that you can then ask and have that. But the training, I was going to say, like the training and like the amount of conversations that need to happen before that, you know, we get to a point where it really knows a lot of things. It's probably
right. Well, and it's interesting too. And I think this will feed right into kind of what you're doing today. If you were to build a digital twin, and it's true, even when you're building just a regular old flat persona in a PowerPoint, but I would think every time you feed it something, you also have the potential to feed it a bias, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to start to be like, instead of feeding it on the raw information, you start to feed it on your interpretation then it gets further and further from being, and then it's just really a replication of you, not a replication of your persona, right? Like that's the extreme version of it. But I think one of the things that's really interesting is when we talked is throughout your career, you saw that bias in data all the time, and it led you to do some pretty cool stuff. So why don't you tell us a little about that?
Exactly. I think that's like, let me just shift the mindset from a digital to, I think like from a product perspective, right? Like we always have that, and bias is such a negative term, but like, I want to say we always have like as product managers, people that build products, product leaders, whatever, we have that love for our own solution. And I have it. Every product manager has it where as soon as we talk to a user, as soon as we talk to a customer, as soon as we talk to a client or whatnot, we already have that solution in mind. We already know like, hey, this is what I'm going to do, and not necessarily understand the problem or the pain or the job that needs to be. Because, you know, like we start with the solution instead of starting with the problem. Now, I'm not the first person to, you know, kind of like come up with that insight. You know, like there's tons of great product leaders out there that, you know, like is pushing, you know, like problem first.
We have some great training on that at Pragmatic. Yes.
And great, exactly. But, you know, like I told you before, like, you know, like I have this round table with different product leaders just to learn. And it's a constant conversation. It's really, no matter how many methodologies that we have to try to get to that point, we'll always have that bias. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the challenge is understanding and knowing that we have that bias, but still be open enough to, you know, kind of listen and really learn and capture the actual need, the actual pain. So when you're building the solution, is actually going to be better. And understanding your own bias as well. I think it's very important to know that, okay, well, you know, like I know what I like and I know what I don't like, right? And I know what I gravitate to. But it shouldn't stop me from trying to understand every perspective, because in the end, that's just how we learn and that's how we improve.
I also think not only do we, and again, I think as product people, we really try not to. That's our goal. We understand the fear and the problem of with, we'll just call it bias, for though it's not intentional. I also think that sometimes it is a lens everybody knows you have. And so it is a credibility hit when you read out your data, right? When you read out your analysis to the rest of the stakeholders and leadership team, there is either like, oh, well, of course you think that because I already know that's your opinion, Sean, or you know what I mean? Like there is a belief that you have this lens that makes them question the analysis, right? And then they're like, well, let me look at the source data, which they never have time to do. So, I mean, it both hurts your analysis, but also hurts your credibility when you read it out.
Exactly. I think that's that, you know, it's almost like we always have to validate. It's like, oh, validate. And which I get it. And it's important in the whole process. But, you know, like, it's almost like it takes so long to get to a point and you have to have so many successes to get to a point where it's like, okay, well, I trust you.
Yeah.
But also then we get like, once we get to a point where it's like people trust us, it's also sometimes detrimental to ourselves as well, because once we get that acceptance, maybe it's not like that, like, hey, like they accepted me, then I'm not trying to then expand because like, hey, I want to stay in this space where people, you know, I'm being accepted for my thoughts, for my beliefs or whatnot. And I need to like, kind of like break out of that to grow.
So what would someone do who has sort of an engineering background, who really understands product and the problems in that space and has a lot of experience with AI and big data? Would they just go, oh, this bias problem is something that exists? Or might they, Sean, come up with a product and a company to address?
I don't know. maybe come up with a product that would address that. So yeah, so that was one of the main reasons that we built Claritive. Is, you know, like we understand that people have biases, you know, like whenever you're having, you know, like we're having conversations, I'm going to filter the knowledge that I gain based out of my experiences and my bias, right? And the reason why we build Claritive is to take out that bias. So the person itself, I can focus on the conversation. I can focus on really understanding and the whole, you know, like I'm almost like belittling it. The whole documentation process.
It's huge though, analysis, right?
Yeah. You know, can be handled by a tool. because in the end, an AI or whatnot is still a tool. And that then gives you, you know, like a full holistic view of the conversation, the information. It doesn't mean that the tool will decide for you. It means that it's presented to you. So you, based out of still your knowledge, then you can decide what's right for your product that can then satisfy your customers. I think that's the, you know, that's our vision and our goal is to be able to reveal, because a lot of those insights get lost, reveal those lost insights from conversation amongst all your conversations. So you can say, hey, this is really what matters to my customers.
Well, I think that's one of the places where it gets really interesting too, is that I think we've all seen, you know, there are some pretty decent built-in AI summaries that you get in your Zoom calls now, or we use a Fathom or something like that. But I think there's two parts, which I find intriguing about Clarative, the company that you've created. One is the ability that it looks across your conversations, right? So not just within one, which is always interesting, but also in trends. And the second piece of it is that it has a product management lens to it, meaning it's looking for the type of insights specifically that a product team is looking for.
Yes, exactly. Because like the reason we did it that way is, you know, there's just going back to the knowledge aspects, right? Is we learn and we generate those insights from several conversations. Let's say, for example, hey, in one meeting, I could be talking about a Google integration, but I know for a fact that I'm never going to be just talking about Google integration in one meeting. I could be talking about Google integration with like 10 different companies, but it may be the main part of the conversation, or it could be, you know, like a 2-minute blurb just doing that was done in passing, right? And I think that's like having, you know, understanding those and being able to pull out those relevant insights makes it more valuable, because then you have, going back to the data, to be able to present, say, hey, this is actually important to my customers, to my users, because not just one, not just the person that, or not just the company that screams the loudest, or the biggest customer say, hey, do this because we want you to do this. But it's almost spanned to like, hey, you're you know, like 12 different customers or 100 different users have mentioned this. Maybe I need to do that.
Yeah.
And to be able to automatically generate that insight is valuable.
Well, and
otherwise it takes hours of analysis.
Right. And it's not just the conversations you have. It can be conversations that others in the organization are having, right? How often is this coming up in support calls? How often is it really coming up in sales calls, right? That's all information you could put in. The other piece of this is so many of us have multiple product managers, and there's some are working on different pieces. And if it's a big part of your conversation, you'll remember to tell that other product manager that it came up in your conversation, right? You'll be like, oh, I should send Bob, I keep picking on Bob today, but Bob, an email that this came up. If it's a small mention, I might not think of it, right? And so again, we're having all these inputs, but we're not being able to centralize and share it. And when we do, it's a big burden, right? It's like but I don't got time to write to Bob.
It is, because like we are at the kind of like the time right now, especially for product managers in this remote world where, you know, like we go from meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting.
So many meetings.
You know, like, and then, you know, because of that, like, and we have global teams, like you could have a team in Europe, in Asia, in Australia or whatnot. And because you're the product manager, let's just say, you know, like if the product manager was in, I don't know, London or something, and then you have a team in, you know, like in Vietnam and a team in the US. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like your days just get longer.
Yeah.
And, you know, like when do you actually have time to sit down and let me analyze, let me actually, you know, kind of like bring up everything that needs to happen. Plus, we all have our own priorities.
Yep.
We all have our own priorities for our product, for our section of our product, right? Because there could be large companies where they have different product managers assigned to different functions, that because it's not something that's relevant to you at the present time, that you never, it gets lost. So your holistic product is almost like diverging, right? Because you don't have that aligned insight.
The other thing, and I apologize because I actually don't know if Clarative does this, but today I have to know what information I'm looking for, right? Hey, if you hear anything about Google, whatever, then make sure you email me. And so only sort of those trends that you know to look for or think about are even going to be reported on. Where with
exactly
with Clarative, I would imagine it could, if it kind of go like, hey, you may not have realized this is a trend, but this is coming up a lot, right? And give you some early insights into something that's more on the precipice, right? That hadn't gotten to the point where you even recognize that, well, maybe this is something I should have some more overt conversations about because it's coming up a lot.
Yeah. Because we do dynamic ranking on importance, and we have different variables on kind of like how we define those importance, right? Like how often does it come up in conversation? How many people are actually talking about it? And then that then funnels in. So our dashboard per se, really it is, like kind of like changes as you have more and more conversation. It's fun to look at. It's like, oh, okay, well, it's fun to look at it from a, from a wider lens, because, one time it's like, okay, well, this is what happened first and then how it changes over time. I think that's exactly what you were saying, is that, hey, okay, well, there's this new thing that's coming up in our conversation. What is that about? Maybe, I may not necessarily put a lot of effort on it, but maybe I should put some effort on it because my customers are talking about it. Maybe this new thing called generative AI is really
might stick around.
Something that we need to think about. What is that? So,
well, and I like that you're thinking too, like there are multiple factors that go into importance. It's not just how often, it's how long when it goes into, there's all kinds of things that play there to make it very important versus just, oh, I make a tick every time the words come up. And that gives you, again, a much more robust understanding of what is important and what should rise to the top.
And context is also part of that, right? Because it's, like a lot of tools that you see, it's like, hey, how many times did you say that word?
Right.
So it's very word specific. But, oh, you said that word. So let me, like, that might be important. But contextually, it may not necessarily be important, right? So I think that's part of the variables. It took a long time to try to get it. And to be honest, just to be totally transparent, I don't know if we got it perfect or right, but we have a plan. We have a way to do it that we can then refine, over time as we learn more and as we see how the data is.
Well, that's part of the beauty of AI, right? Is that it gets to learn, right? And that is the goal. You're just kind of thinking about how to continue to improve. So, okay. So we talked about your journey. We talked about digital twins. We talked about Clarative and what you do there. I think there's a couple other areas that are really interesting to explore considering all of those things you did. One is, again, we keep joking about it, but generative AI, AI in general is very, very big today. And there are so many opportunities as product people and business leaders to take advantage of it and take opportunities. And there's also a lot of fake news, right? Like things that may be possible one day, but aren't, like, we're not there yet. And it's sometimes really hard to see some of those things. So just as someone who's used it within and then builds a product that leverages it, can we talk a little bit about sort of the opportunities and the challenges and risks in that kind of tool?
Yeah. So I think, like, first things first, I think you need to look at it as a tool because, like, by having that lens of like, hey, an AI or whatever these solutions, applications, it is a tool. It's a tool to make you as a person that's using that tool better, faster, more efficient, right? I always liken it to, you're never going to replace a good carpenter with a greater hammer.
Yes.
Right. Because regardless if you can automate, if you can make the hammer kind of like electric or whatnot, it's still a hammer that needs somebody to guide it, that needs somebody to hold it or steel, that needs somebody to use it, right? And, like if we look at it from that lens, I think that would, kind of like put you in a better perspective.
It's a great perspective.
In being able to see like, okay, what tools can I use to make myself better? Now, I think the negative aspect of it is the full dependence on these said tools to decide for you, right? I think this is where we need to sort of like look at it. Okay, the output, is it accurate? Because we tend to, and even before generative AI, right? Like just Google. Oh, I found it on Google. It must be true. Oh, I found it on the internet. It must be true.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's what kind of like is what caused the prevalence of fake news, right? Because it's, there was a website that said it, that, it's almost like, okay, well, is it really true?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it. I think that's part of like, with, because an AI is only good as the data that trains mm-hmm. it. And if you train a large language model with things that you find on the internet, now is it something that you can really trust? So I think like having that lens, and then I think, you know, that's really, you know, that going back to the concept of what are the risks, right? Like that's really the risk. That is the risk of depending too much on these generative AI. It's like, okay, if I don't understand how it's being trained, how do I know that what's it's giving me? Because it's giving me knowledge. Mm-hmm. It's not giving me data. It's giving me kind of like, you know, like it's giving me knowledge. Like, do I trust that knowledge? Like, do I trust that? Okay. Can I believe the data that this knowledge has come from is accurate? Mm. And I think that's where, I think you mentioned it earlier too. Like that's where like some biases on these AI models also get learned, yeah. right? Because it will only learn based out of what's, you know, it's just like a kid or a human being, right? Like, you know, like as a child grows, that child's mindset is, I want to say probably, I don't know what the actual, probably 50, 60, 70, 80% the result of the input that that child consumes as he's growing.
Yeah.
As she's growing.
My daughter is a firm believer that pickles are terrible. She's never had a pickle, but I have trained her to think that they're terrible. Right. But I mean, it is. It's like, I didn't mean to, but every time I see one, I sort of cringe. So, but yeah, you're right. It is like a kid. You influence them even when you don't realize it. And here, not only, there's a lot of that that goes in place. And that is a risk. It just means to your pen, you can't, you know, just, you have to have reviews and controls and oversight on what you're getting out of that tool to make sure that it's reviewed, that you're validating it elsewhere to ensure that you can trust it or how to improve it.
So, of course. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's, you know, like just looking at like, how do we regulate it? How do you, like, I think that's part of it, right? It's like, okay, how is it trained?
Yeah.
I don't necessarily care about the model itself, kind of like the programming aspects, but how is it trained?
It's the data that's used more than the, you know, which language did they use or that kind of thing. Yeah. No, very much so.
Exactly. Yeah. And just going back, I like to tell this story about, you know, like the digital twin, right? And then just going back to that perspective, I tell this story whenever I talk about the twin is that when I was a kid, I was a full vegetarian. Like every time I eat, you know, like meat, I was, you know, like I would regurgitate. I was like, oh, it doesn't, until I was 6 years old. I don't know who he was. It was either, I don't know if it was my mom or my aunt or my cousin. They gave me a piece of fried chicken. As soon as I had that piece of fried chicken, my life changed. It was just like, okay, well.
As did the chickens. Yep.
So it's basically, and that's, you know, kind of like, I think it's that progression, right? And those events that happen that change kind of like how I grew up and how, and I think that's how it is with AI too. It's like there's these events that keep, and that's how it is with digital twins.
Yep.
Like, or it needs to be with digital twins. There's events that drive like what that current perspective is for that twin.
So your twin has to keep learning, right?
It has to keep learning. Exactly. Yep. Because all those inputs will, you know, like,
that's a really important concept too on your AI models and your digital twins. Like it's not done. It has to continually learn because everything else is moving forward.
Exactly. Because, you know, like as I walk through life or as I walk through, you know, like the world, there's always inputs. That's why I have eyes. That's why we have eyes, ears, because, you know, we're always capturing all of these inputs. And I think, you know, like even this conversation, I'm learning so much within this conversation that it's going to change me from yesterday to how I am tomorrow.
Yeah. So a model that doesn't do that, a twin that doesn't do it, becomes obsolete. It's like when you drive a car off the lot, right? Like as soon as you're done upgrading it, it's no longer a useful tool. And that's got to be part of the plan from the beginning is how does this continue to be maintained and improved?
Maintained. Exactly. And if you want to have, and I think this is where AI and digital twin is almost aligned. If you want to have an accurate twin, if you want to have a really good AI model, it has to constantly learn. It has to constantly be fed inputs, because if you do a stop at, say, like at a certain point, then I can't really use it. OpenAI with ChatGPT, right? For the last, I don't know if they've updated it, but let's just say early last year, there's like, our models are only trained up to 2021. And you ask like, hey, ChatGPT, what happened in 2022? It's like, oh, I don't know anything about that because I've only been trained.
Nothing's changed.
Like, okay, well, how useful are you? Right. You know what I mean? You're not giving me the right data. I think that's very important. Now, it's the cost associated to it to train AI models is enormous. I understand. But I think that's to really, to get to a point where, you know, we can really trust and we can really say like, okay, it's data, the input, and how often or is it continuously learning? And if we have that, then we would have a really good AI model.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. The other path I want to take this conversation down, because there's a lot of fun in our few remaining minutes, is thinking about, so you have made the journey from a product manager to a CEO. And more and more, we see CEOs of very large tech companies that came from the product space, right? Or we see product people who do this kind of thing. They see the problem, they have the resources, they understand the concepts, and they go out and kind of build their own company. What, like, if you were to go back in time when you started in product management, now that you've been a CEO, what do you think would be helpful for product managers to understand about that CEO role? What would make up, like, what would you want them to understand? And how would you be like, and this way you could help them even more?
That you don't know everything. Mm. And I think that's, you know, like with product managers, like you can't be the person that is the end all and be all of your product, right? Because you're never going to be an expert at everything. Mm-hmm. I think it's the, like, it's really fostering, like, okay, well, you know, like, I don't need to know what the solution is. I have a team, I have engineers that have all of these experience that can build a solution for me. And I think that's the same thing for, you know, like, kind of like, there's always that perspective, like, a product manager is the CEO of your product, right? But, like, being a CEO of your product, it's never, you're not the focal point. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the same thing with, you know, kind of like running your product and running your company, is that you don't know everything.
Yep.
And you should accept the fact that you don't know everything. You know where your, you know, like, know where your strengths are, you know where your weaknesses are. I always told myself, like, and I've told people, I was like, okay, well, I know how to build products. I know how to, you know, I've done it before. I understand building kind of like digital solutions. You talk to me about product marketing, you talk about me messaging and position, I'd be like,
yeah.
I can try, I can iterate, I can experiment, I can use the mindset that I've, you know, kind of like the mindset that I've cultivated as a product manager in this other spaces to be able to learn and get better. So I think that's, if there is one other thing that I would say, aside from you don't know everything, is use what makes you a great product manager to make yourself a better CEO, right? That curiousness, that willingness to experiment, that focus on, you know, like the problem and know that there is not just one solution and iterate and iterate and iterate and iterate until you get it sort of right.
Right.
Because you're never going
to
get it.
No. Right. And that, but that's an important lesson too, to remember, like, we're not going to get it right. We're going to get it so it's valuable and it's delivering value, and we're going to keep working on it because we're going to keep listening.
Yeah. And the one thing I'd love to say is just ship and deliver.
Yeah.
Because most often than not, that initial delivery as a CEO, as a product manager, people are going to hate.
That's encouraging, but true.
And it's okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's just like, you know, like I always say, so it's like, I would rather deliver and people not like it, because now I know how to pivot.
Yep.
To change. Like, okay, not like, oh, we really, you know, didn't, you know, like we made a mistake in this one. It was just like a quick hypothesis. Now we know better. Now we can make it.
Nice.
A change. Because if you try to like, okay, let me wait on the delivery. Let me wait and starting my company, or let me wait until, you know, like I do that until I have a really good grasp on it. And you've wasted so much time instead of learning. Instead of learning about marketing, instead of learning about HR, you know, instead of learning about all of these things.
Yeah.
You could have just started.
Excellent advice. All right, Sean, we talked about a lot of different things today. If you could get our listeners to do two things differently tomorrow, based on what we talked about today, what would that be?
Just start is one. And I hate saying this because it's almost so you hear it a lot and you hear a lot from different product leaders as well. But I truly believe is that don't be afraid to fail. Mm. Because if you just start, it's like, okay, well, you know, like at least it's there, right? And if I fail, as long as you think of failure as a way of learning, not as a full stop, then you can get better. It's not a new insight, but it's an insight that I truly believe in. Yeah. And it's what got me where I am today. So
awesome.
I hope that helps.
Absolutely. All right, Sean, there are a lot of listeners who are thinking, hey, this Clarative thing sounds like it's pretty cool. If they wanted to check it out, how might they do that? How might they get to try out your AI tool?
No, for sure. Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, it's https clarative.ai. Now, Clarative is clarative.ai. So there is no E at the end. And to be honest, even our website is kind of like, you know, it's not the best, but you know, it's always a work in progress. But they can always reach out to me on LinkedIn, Sean Gigermos on LinkedIn. And always happy to, you know, kind of like extend these conversations because, you know, like my whole thing is like, I learn from everybody's, you know, people that reach out to me, people that talk to me. I learn from you all as well. So if you're interested, if they're interested, if they're curious, happy to have a talk.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, Sean, thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Rebecca, this has been a wonderful, amazing conversation. As I, you know, like 70% of my knowledge right now is, you know, kind of like expanded because of this. So I really appreciate and thank you for having me. And yeah, looking forward to having future conversations. I love this form.
Excellent. All right. And I think everybody's who's listening, including and myself, we've also learned a bunch. So it was a win-win for everybody.
Awesome. All right. Thank you.
That does it for today's episode. Thank you everyone for listening. And don't forget to join us next week when we tackle another great topic designed to help you elevate your product, your company, and your career.